My name is Peter Angelos, and I have the honor of being the president of the U.S. chapter of the International Surgical Society. And one of the great perks of that position is the opportunity to introduce the ISS Distinguished Lecturer at the Clinical Congress. So I will do that in just one moment. Before I do that, let me encourage you all to, on your way out, pick up one of the multiple cards on the table just outside the door with a reminder about the 48th International Surgical Week, which will be in Krakow, Poland from August 11 through 15 of 2019. And for those of you who are members of the collective societies that make up the ISS, the abstract deadlines will be coming up soon, so you'll want to be sending in your best work. So I do encourage you to come to Krakow in August. And then I would also just say that immediately following the lecture today, there will be a special assembly of the ISS to discuss some important initiatives with the organization moving forward. So enough about the housekeeping. Let me turn to the reason that you are all here today, and that is to hear my friend and an honored surgeon, Professor Jacques Marescot. He is the professor of surgery and chairman of the Institute of Image-Guided Surgery, president and founder of IRCAD, which is a uniquely structured institute advancing the field of surgery into the information era. In addition, Professor Marescot founded the European Institute of Telesurgery as a training facility to disseminate the groundbreaking work at IRCAD. And over the last 24 years, this center has gained international acclaim by training more than 40,000 surgeons in 124 countries. And there are now mirror IRCAD institutes in Taiwan, started in 2008, in Sao Paulo, Brazil, 2011, Rio de Janeiro in 2017, now a project in Beirut, Lebanon in 2018, and the fifth Mirror Institute will be inaugurated in 2019 in Kigali, Rwanda, to train African surgeons in new minimally invasive surgical techniques. In 2000, IRCAD EITS implemented a virtual online university called WebSurge, which is available in six different languages and is free of charge. And something, I use it, my residents use it, I encourage them to use it, and is available throughout the world for anyone who has internet access. In 2001, Professor Marescot performed the first transcontinental laparoscopic surgery while being in New York. This is known as Operation Lindbergh. Many of you are familiar with that. He is believed to be the first in the world to operate on a patient without leaving a scar in 2007. Professor Marescot and his team published up to 4,000 national and international articles and communications. He's received honorary degrees from a number of universities and honorary fellowships at the Royal College of Surgeons in London and the Japanese Society of Endoscopic Surgery, and is a member of a large range of editorial boards. I could go on and on, but you really don't want to hear me. I realize that. So it is with great pleasure that I welcome Professor Jacques Marescot to the stage.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you very much, Peter. Really, for me, it's a pleasure to share this history of IRCAD and the different projects that we develop in this institute. Disclosure, as chairman of IRCAD, very few, because we have some exclusivity with Storz, Medtronic, and Intuitive Surgical. But as chairman of Institute of Image-Guided Surgery, we have more than 36 grants paid and supported by different companies that you see here. But I think that we have so many grants that it is a neutralization of conflict of interest. So I think I have no conflict of interest. I didn't know that Rick Satava will be here today, so I don't want to flatter you. But I want to explain to everybody, as I say for all my lecture, that one day in 1991, my brain totally changed. I totally opened mine. Why? Because I attend an exceptional lecture of Rick Satava in Germany. It was in 1991, and he has explained the future power of internet before it exists, the power of robotics, which didn't exist, the power of virtual reality, of augmented reality, and nothing exists. And when I came back, I decided with my coworker to say, that is a way of surgery, even if I have understood, I think, less than 20% of the lecture, not only due to the problem of language, but due to the problem of the content of the lecture. It was very difficult to understand. And it was impossible. I work also in the National Institute of Research in France, and at this period, computer science was not a science. Science was just molecular biology. So it was impossible. And that's the reason why we decided to create a non-profit private institution totally dedicated to this kind of research and this kind of education. Why it has worked? It's really a success story for three reasons. One, I had the chance to meet this man who is Leon Hirsch. He was the CEO of United States Surgical Corporation. I sent a fax, and immediately by return of fax, he said that he was interested by this project, and he was the first founder of this project. The second one is that Strasbourg is a little city in France. It's a city of 400,000 inhabitants. But like in Germany, it is a very powerful university. It is one of the largest universities with 53,000 students, with 25% foreign students. And it is the only one in France with one in Paris Descartes to be in the top 100 university in the world in the ranking of Shanghai. And the third reason of the success is that I was born to be a businessman. You see, that was my business plan in front of the bank. But imagine that 25 years ago, it was possible to have money with this kind of business plan. So it was the beginning of IRCAD. And that was done. That is the institute today. Since the beginning, and that is due to you, Rick, we had just the idea to say we need to have the vision of augmented surgery. And when we speak to the surgeon about the concept of augmented surgery, the first answer is, I want to improve my vision. I want to see more than what I am able to see today. The number two is I want to improve my skill, and that is robotics. And finally, and more, especially since the last 5 years, is how we can imagine to improve our brain with artificial intelligence. So the first one is the vision. The vision is how we can reconstruct in 3D an image which is very difficult to understand and that everybody in the operating room, but also the patient, can understand. And that is really the magic of virtual reality. We have done a lot because we start in 1995. It was difficult. The image at the beginning were digitalized. And now you see this one was published in New England Journal of Medicine in 2012. You see it is for an approach of neck surgery. And just to imagine that today when we look at this picture, it is exactly like an anatomical book of surgery, which is the digital clone of the patient. And I remember the lecture of Frick at this period with a visible man in the Library of Washington. And here, for example, very easy to see that we have an arterial usuria. We have a lot of examples. These examples we show during the hepatobiliary course that we organize. And you see, it is a cholangiocarcinoma. Even if we have 25 experts, the best experts in the world about hepatic surgery, 100%, when they look at the image, they say that the cholangiocarcinoma is on the right side of the liver. And when we use a 3D method with the possibility of transparency, immediately, in 1 second, everybody will understand that it is on the left side, so just the opposite. And you see that we can remove everything, but we can also have like a virtual clip. We know the vascularization, and we can put a virtual clip on one branch of the portal vein, and immediately we have the vascular territory. So it's the best way to prepare an operation for hepatic surgery. A lot of application, I want to show two for pediatric surgery because a pediatric surgeon, Professor Beckmer, in the University of Strasbourg, he like, and for all complex surgery use. You see here is a very big hematoma for a young baby of some months. Very difficult to imagine how to prepare this operation, but with virtual reality, immediately, we see the two arteries coming from the liver, so the diagnosis was done, the strategy was done, and the operation was performed in 45 minutes. He had planned more hours and hours. That is one example. Another example is for pediatric application was a nephroblastoma on the two kidneys. And you see the right and the left one. And for the left one, it was planned to do a nephrectomy. But today, more and more, with virtual reality, we understand that we can have a segmentation, an arterial segmentation of the kidney, exactly as we have a segmentation for the liver. And more, we can perform conservative surgery, which was done on this young baby. And you see that 1 month later, he had enough kidney to live without any dialysis. When we have a reconstruct, we need to send the reconstruction in the operating room. So it can be on the screen if it is laparoscopic surgery. It can be on an iPad if it is open surgery. But we know that the surgeon doesn't like to touch something in the operating room. And that is the reason why our director of scientific board, Luc Solaire, developed a very nice program with three companies in France with like a modern holography, you see, because we don't want to touch the screen. We have just to imagine that the image of the organ we are operating on can be in a virtual environment in the operating room. So that is the first step. The second step is in the operating room or just before or the day before, we can have a simulation of the operation, which is a personalized simulation on the data of the patient. So here, for example, you have three metastases of the liver. We propose with a computer a trisegmentectomy for the left one. And for the right one, you see that we can propose a radiofrequency ablation. And we can really imagine the best way to have the needle in the center of the tumor. And that is exactly what we call a simulation with the personalized data of the patient. And you see that we can take all the different instruments that we are going to use the day during the operation. So we have reconstruct in 3D. Everybody understands. We can do the planning of the operation. We can do a personalized simulation. But the surgeon wants more. The surgeon wants to see in transparency. And that is a very complex concept, which is augmented reality. Augmented reality, you have the virtual image of the digital clone of the patient, you have the image given by the camera, and you want the fusion of both. It looks simple. And I remember when you organized a congress in San Diego 20 years ago, in the years 1992, the concept of augmented reality was developed by the neurosurgeon. Why? Because it is simple. You do the MRI or you do the CT scan of the patient, and during the operation, you fix the brain, nothing moves, and you can have an augmented reality, which is nearly simple. It's absolutely not the case that we have in surgery. That is the reason why we work in the first years only on retroperitoneal organ, like adrenal tumor here. Why? Because when it is a retroperitoneal organ, we have no movements of the gland during the operation due to the bracing and no modification of the volume due to the pneumoperitoneum. And so you see that it is in real time. At this period, it was not automatic. That was published in JAMA in 2004. But we had the possibility to see the normal gland, the tumor, the transparency with the vascularization, and when we dissect the right renal vein, for example, immediately we see also in transparency the superior polar artery of the kidney that absolutely we need to preserve. So that was the beginning, and that was more than 15 years ago in our specialty. One good application was also pancreas, especially little tumors, endocrine tumors, because very often we know that it is difficult to find the localization, the exact localization of this tumor during the operation. And here again, it is certainly a fantastic application of augmented reality. But we had a very important technological challenge. That was what we call the rigid deformation. We know that in real life, the patient has not, during the operation, the position he had when we have performed the CT scan. We perform the CT scan, normally it is in a supine position. And you see that the patient can be in lateral decubitus, be in prone position, etc. So that is the first problem. The second problem is movements due to the bracing. And you see that on this MRI, that it is sometimes for the liver more than 5 centimeters. Another problem we have is the pressure due to the pneumoperitoneum. We inject a lot of CO2, so we have a deformation of the volume of the organ. And finally, we all know that the first thing we do in laparoscopic surgery or in robotic surgery is to put a retractor, to put a grasper, and immediately we change the position of the organ. And the organ has not the same position he had during the CT scan. And so the computer doesn't understand how to do the fusion in real time. We have really the team of computer scientists, they have done since especially the last 2 years a lot of progress. The problem of bracing is solved by the software that they have developed, and they put just a marker on the sternum, and immediately the software can analyze, due to the modification of the sternum, the modification of the position of the liver. They have solved the problem of the position of the patient by a very simple chip, RBGD camera, and you see they can do a mold of the patient, and even if the patient changes the position, it will be an automatic adaptation. And as you see, it is a lateral decubitus. The CT scan was done in a supine decubitus, and immediately we can have a good superimposition. We have also a lot of details which are real life. For example, if we put somebody with a little obese in a lateral decubitus, we have a lot of problem of fat. Here again, they have solved the problem, and you see that immediately the software adapts in the exact position of the patient during the operation. And another problem that we had when we wanted to have a superimposition on the body of the patient is that normally the superimposition was also on the glove of the surgeon. And we don't want that, especially for percutaneous surgery. So they have developed another software, and you see that we have not this superimposition also on the glove of the surgeon. But it is more complex. Why it is more complex? We have solved the problem of position of the patient. We have solved all the problem of the external vision that we want. But during the operation, the change of the position of the organ was not solved. And the only possibility was to develop an intraoperative imaging technique giving to the computer the real position of the organ in real time. And we were lucky because 5 years ago, the French government proposed to create 5 centers of excellence, one in surgery, with a lot, more than $100 million. If we can prove that we have exactly the same amount by private partner. And you see that during more than 1 year, with 8 engineers of Siemens, we have imagined the operating room of our dream if we wanted to go to augmented reality. So we have imagined to have in the operating room the CT scan, the MRI, the robotized CT scan, which is the ZIGO, the 4D ultrasonography. And after that, we have created this institute, just a link with IRCAD, and just in front of IRCAD, which is the Institute of Image Guided Surgery, totally dedicated to image guided surgery, not only for research, but also for education and for patient care, because we have 8 hybrid operating rooms dedicated to image guided surgery. How it works? It's very simple, because for a complex hepatic surgery, for example, you have in the same operating room the CT scan for the vascular, that means for the arterial phase, for the venous phase. But because we know that we want to have the biliary tract anatomy, we can have also the MRI. We have the biliary tract. And during the operation, we have this machine, which is a Zigo, which is a fantastic machine. In 1 second, we have 360 degrees. So it is a CT scan. But the quality is not very good because we have very low radiation because we have in the operating room. But the machine is so smart that in real time, she takes the information of the CT scan you have just done in the operating room, of the MRI, and you have the fusion. And you can do what you want. You can take the picture of laparoscopy and put in the CT scan, or you can take the image of the CT scan and put in the image of laparoscopic surgery. Now we change. It was a Zigo until 6 months ago. 6 months ago, we have changed with a new generation of Zigo, which is the Pheno, which is more ergonomic, more done for gastroenterologists and digestive surgeon. And you see that is one of the hybrid operating room using this machine. So that is all the development we have done. And you see what we work on for the next years concerning vision. And personally, I am totally convinced that the progress of surgery in the next 20 years will be more the progress of the image, of the medical image, than the progress of the skill of the surgeon. Second point is augmented hand. Augmented hand, everybody knows what it is. It is the robots. We also know that today it is a prehistory of robot, and we will have a fantastic good competition in the next 2 years. We have always been interested by the robotics since the lecture of Rick Satava. And I remember that we like also the challenge. So as Peter Angelo said, in 2001, we have done the first remote operation between New York and Strasbourg. Why? Just because everybody said it was impossible, the delay was too long, etc. And so it was done. We can have the sound, please. That was the first reaction in the United States. A little higher.
Here is an amazing story. Surgeons in New York City used a remote controlled robot to remove the gallbladder of a woman in France. You following me here? From monitors, TV monitors in New York working the controls, they were able to use the robot in France to remove her gallbladder. In fact, right now, as I'm standing here, there's a doctor in Belgium checking my prostate.
So, you know, we had a lot of approach like that, I think, because they were jealous because we were not American. But we have been very proud because it was the first time that a team of surgeons have the possibility to publish in high priority in Nature. And that was the article that we have published in Nature. We try a lot of time after that, but it was always rejected. Second point with the robot, how we can imagine that the robot will have, like a car, a GPS. So here, for example, it's a Da Vinci system. Armando Melani, the director of IRCAD Brazil, you see that he performed a complex case of rectal cancer, and he has on the iPad, like a GPS, the 3D reconstruction given by the CT scan. And he has not to look outside of the master part of the robot, because when he is in the master part of the robot, he has two views, the view of the laparoscopic view and the view of the GPS, the view of the digital clone of the patient. And you imagine and you see in the fat of this patient how it is important to know the details, especially of different lymph nodes. We tried also, but that was before the Zigo, to do and to use the robot for augmented reality. So it's very interesting for this patient with liver surgery. With a computer, we know exactly the volume that we remove. And you see that now everything is virtual. That means the instrument that you see are not real instruments. It's a virtual instrument to know where to put the instrument to have the best position with a target, which is the organ we want to operate on. And when the surgeon is looking in the master part of the robot, he has a normal view and he has the virtual view, which was confirmed in this case by the ultrasonography. We try also to develop robotics and flexible endoscopy. And you see, that is a prototype that we have done, especially with the team of computer scientists in Strasbourg and roboticians of the University of Strasbourg and Karl Storz. Why? Also, I think very often when I attend a lecture, I change my opinion. And it was 3 years ago in Osaka, Professor Tanigawa, Japanese, say that it was the first time, the first year in Japan, they have operated more gastric cancer by flexible endoscopy, 52,000 cases, and only 48,000 by normal surgery or laparoscopic surgery. And they plan 5 years after to have 80% of gastric cancer operated by flexible endoscopy. Why? Because they perform early detection of the cancer. But because we know that in the future it will be early detection for all the cancer of the alimentary tract, for the esophagus, for the stomach, for the colon, for the rectum, that means that more and more we need to be trained in endoluminal surgery, especially with this kind of instruments, because when we have seen how a gastroenterologist can do a complex procedure, it's totally crazy, because all the instruments go out of the flexible endoscope in a parallel way, which is a no sense, because we want absolutely a triangulation. We have seen that this prototype was not so easy to work with. So with a robotician, we have developed exactly the same, a little shorter, but with robotization. And today, I think it's a really fantastic prototype. I gave the example some minutes ago. 3 weeks ago, Professor Dalmine with the upper GI of IRCAD performed ESD with this robot. And the other one was assistant professor of Korea with more than 1,000 ESD in the past. And Bernard Dalmine, with absolutely no experience of flexible endoscopy, has done better and faster. So also to imagine how important will be robotics and flexible endoscopy. Finally, augmented brain. So augmented brain, that is artificial intelligence, and every day we have something in a newspaper to say that that is totally new. It is not true. Artificial intelligence, is very old, because in 1957, it was the first artificial intelligence machine developed by Frank Rosenblatt. So that exists. But in 2014, that was really the shock. Why? Because everybody said in the computer science that it's possible for artificial intelligence to win for check game, but never for the Go game in Korea. And in 2014, the computer was the winner against the champion, world champion, who was a Korean. So that was in 2014. And immediately it was an explosion. All the venture capitalists, they put hundreds of millions in artificial intelligence to say the job of radiologist is finished, everything will be done by artificial intelligence, the same for the robots in surgery, etc. We have to understand what is really the definition of artificial intelligence, machine learning, and deep learning. Artificial intelligence, it is a generic name, a general expression. It is how we can program a computer to mimic human intelligence. To do that, we need a machine learning. And a machine learning is how we can program a computer to solve, and that is important, a specific task by supplying it with training data. But you see, a specific task. Today, artificial intelligence cannot do two tasks, only one task. And finally, we have the deep learning. What is the deep learning? Everybody speaks about the deep learning. It is a machine learning using computerized models of neurons. And that was really the revolution. Why? I don't understand this slide. You imagine, because I am a surgeon. But how a mathematician can imagine that he can reproduce everything which goes from one neuron to another one in the brain by a mathematic algorithm. And that was really the beginning of everything, because if you lose this curve before deep learning, more and more you put data to the computer, you don't increase the performance of the computer because you had a plateau. And with the new system of deep learning, more and more you have data, more and more you have a good performance. So that was really a very important step.
Watson analyzes
you all know the application of artificial intelligence
of
a little higher,
please. Vast body of medical literature. Once the results of the tests come in, Dr. Norton presses the treatment options tab to see a panel of suggested confidence scored treatments. He also sees a list of clinical trials to consider. This is just one of the many areas that Watson's cognitive capabilities can be applied to help people live and work in better ways.
So that is the first application. You all know that is medical, Watson Medical, certainly one of the best today on the market. You see that in some second it can read more than 3,500 books, 250,000 articles in the literature. That is knowledge, and that is relatively simple because you just put the knowledge and he has to give back the knowledge. And you certainly know that last year it was for the first time in Beijing, in China, that an artificial intelligence successfully passed his exam at the end of medical school. The name is Xiao Li. He was not the first one, but it was in the average. And we imagine that in the next 5 years, certainly can be the number one at his exam. That is just because it is knowledge that you put. And that is a big problem for the next training of our student in medical school. I would like not to be a dean today to know how we are going to change, because today, especially in France, it was just to put in our brain knowledge, knowledge, knowledge. So that is relatively simple. After that, we say, oh, artificial intelligence, when we see Google, etc., it will be for the robot exactly the same. So look, because we have a smart car that can recognize a person, a motorcycle, another car, or something else, but it is totally different. And that is relatively simple for artificial intelligence. And when you look on the right, the complexity of one total CT scan with a lot of slices, it is totally impossible for an artificial intelligence today to understand what it is. It is totally impossible. It can do that one organ and with one target, one task, which is, for example, to analyze one nodule. So it is possible for detection, segmentation, classification of the CT scan. You learn your machine to detect a nodule and it's able to detect a nodule. But there is a big difference. The machine on a CT scan of the lung can detect a nodule as an expert, and certainly very often better than an expert. But if in the same CT scan, you have your nodule, and on the other lung, you have a tuberculosis, for example, and he was not trained for that, never he will understand the second image. Why? Because he can do only one task. So relatively easy for the CT scan. For the ultrasonography, it's more difficult because it is a dynamic analysis, but you see, that is what done by the computer scientist of IRCAD in Strasbourg. Today, even with the ultrasonography, we can have exactly the same result than with an expert. And finally, we have the operating vision. So we say, oh, the next robot will be a robot who is going to understand all the details of the anatomy. And that is absolutely difficult. And why it is difficult? Because when you have a procedure, even a simple procedure, you have to teach your computer always that is a gallbladder in this situation, but you change the situation. It is also the gallbladder here. It is a common bile duct here. And for a simple operation like a cholecystectomy today, a surgical fellow, so an operation of between 20 and 45 minutes, has 7 hours to teach the computer. So you imagine, because we don't need to have 100, we need to have millions of procedures to be sure that one day it will be certainly the best system to avoid a complication. However, we start, and we start to give to the computer. Today it is only 180 procedure of cholecystectomy. And something which was interesting by different surgeons is that the computer, after 50 cholecystectomy, has understood that always he has 7 steps in this operation. And for training, for learning, it's very easy because when we clip to say, show the clipping of the cystic duct, immediately we can see the 150. So just a problem, data and complexity to put prospective data. And we wanted to imagine how artificial intelligence can change and can control an operating room. And I like this slide of Luc Solaire, our director of scientific department. He showed the slide that said, you see, when we look at an airport and an hospital, it could be the same architect because it's the same. And he pushed on the button and said, no, there is a big difference. It is a control tower. And in an hospital today, even if we are able to do, we have no checklist, no black box, no control tower, and no normalized data. So that's the reason why we have developed a big project with the French government, whose name is Condor, is how we can imagine to take and to put on the same console all the pre- and intraoperative 2D, 3D image given by all the imaging technology, an external camera to look the different position of all the team of surgery, the laparoscopic camera, and all the physiological data given by the anesthesiologist. And today, that is possible, and we have the possibility to have on a different screen. I think that is the best slide that I like. That certainly you know because it was in the New York Times 6 months ago. The importance of the data. It is like if you educate badly a kid. That means the MIT engineers, they have created an artificial intelligence powered psychopath named Norman. That means, they learn that is not a bottle of water, that is a gun, etc. And after that, artificial intelligence is totally crazy because it is what you have educated. And they have a normal one. And you see, they give to artificial intelligence computer to analyze this image, the pink image, and the normal artificial intelligence say it is a person is holding an umbrella in the air. And the other computer, the psychopath, say man is shot dead in front of his screaming wife. So that is, I think, a very important message because that means every mistake that you put in the data that you give to the computer can have a disaster of repercussion after that. Concerning artificial intelligence, we have three levels. And also we need to be very humble. Today, it's only the artificial narrow intelligence. That is a machine intelligence that equals or exceeds human intelligence or efficiency, but only on a specific task. So that is very important. That is a big limit. We have an artificial general intelligence. That is a machine we have the ability to apply intelligence to any problem rather than just one specific problem. And we are very far from this result if we speak to the computer scientist. And finally, the dream of everybody, we have an artificial superintelligence. That means an intellect that is much smarter than the best human brains. That means Wiken is better than Da Vinci, Mozart for the music, Einstein, Peter Angelo for the ethics, for example, that is impossible to imagine or very in the next 20 years. So that is absolutely not easy to imagine today. I want to conclude, because that was also the conclusion of the lecture of Rick Satava 25 years ago about innovation and education. If we have innovation, if we have, we need education and we need training. And that was the reason why we decided in IRCAD France first to organize this training course in, you will see, not only laparoscopic surgery, but in laparoscopic surgery, in virtual reality also, in augmented reality, we have more and more different courses. Also in flexible endoscopy, complex in, flexible endoscopy procedures, but also more and more percutaneous surgery, which is a surgery also, especially for big complication of hepatobiliary tract, robotics. And we are lucky because after the visit of Gary Guttertz, the CEO of Intuitive Surgical, we start by 4 robots, after that 6, now 10, and they put 2 more next week, so 12 robots for the training. And today they have the exclusivity, but we know that it's going to change. Just to see something that never we have expected at the beginning is that just IRCAD France last year, we have trained more than 6,000 surgeons coming from 120 different countries. And at the beginning, when we plan to train 150 only. WebSurg, Peter Angelo spoke during the introduction. We believe that is very important to keep the link between the surgeon who is trained and when he is returning at home. So we have really a fantastic, due to all the experts, because the strength of IRCAD and WebSurg is the quality of the different international faculty. So we have today more than 7,000 videos. Something important, it is translated in 7 languages. It is free of charge. We can have a CME credit points. So that's really a big machine to learn. And you see that today we have more than 350,000 active members. That means members connected more than twice per week. And finally, it was a globalization that never we have planned before, because IRCAD France was created in 1994. After that, Taiwan, 2008. After that, Sao Paulo in 2011, in Barreto, state of Sao Paulo, Rio de Janeiro. And now 3 projects. One is nearly finished in Beirut, in Lebanon, in Africa, and certainly one in China. So just some seconds of view to see that that is IRCAD in Taiwan, that a lot of you were in Taiwan. It's exactly a copy of what we have done in Strasbourg, the same with some improvement. In Brazil, in Barretos, it is a fantastic center in the middle of nowhere. And something interesting, Barretos, it's in the state of Sao Paulo, but you have only ranch. You have a ranch of cows, of horses. And in Barretos, you had a farmer who is a fantastic man, who had a very rich multimillionaire, decided to create the best cancer center in Brazil and in Latin America, which is really a fantastic hospital. Everything is free for all the poor people in Brazil. So he has 32 tracks. He goes in Amazonia for the prevention and the detection of prostatic cancer, breast cancer, lung cancer, colonic cancer. He came back with not only the patient for free, but all the family for free. He has built a fantastic hotel, free for all the family. And he has a network of farmers with more than 20 tons of food to give that for free. So sometimes by IRCAD, we have discovered some exceptional person. One of the last one was in Brazil, in Rio. That is a medical American hospital in Rio with 3 entries, first class, business class, and economical class. That is impossible in France. You cannot do that. And this one, I like this project. The project was asked by the president of Rwanda, who is Paul Kagame. And it will be the biggest, the most ambitious one, not only for training for these African surgeons, which today they have certainly, they have not developed a lot minimal invasive surgery, but also research. And I was totally surprised that they have a University of Computer Science, an American one in Kigali. And we had, when they knew the project, we had more than 50 candidates. We have selected 7 candidates of very high level of artificial intelligence and computer science. So we will extend also our team in Africa. And that is a conclusion. There is no limit in the imagination of the surgeon. And that is how I was trained.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, sir.
Not late, I hope.
Not at all, sir.
Now, you just lie still, old fellow. I've just got to discuss your case with these young doctors here. Take his pajamas off, sister. You, examine his abdomen. Take that grubby fist away. The first rule of diagnosis, gentlemen, eyes first and most, hands next and least, and tongue not at all. Look! Have you looked?
Yes, sir.
See anything?
No, sir.
Very good. Carry on. Gently, man, gently. You're not making bread. Don't forget, to be a successful surgeon, you need the eye of a hawk, the heart of a lion, and the hands of a lady. You found it?
Yes, sir.
Well, what is it?
A lump.
Well, what do you make of it? Is it kidney? Is it spleen? Is it liver? Is it dangerous? No, don't worry, my good man. You won't understand our medical talk. You. What are we going to do about it? Cut it out, man. Cut it out. And where shall we make the incision? Nothing like large enough. Keyhole surgery. Damnable. Couldn't see anything. Like this. Now, don't worry. This is nothing whatever to do with you.
Okay, so I think it's the best conclusion. I want to finish just to say thank you to Peter Angelo for this invitation. It was really a pleasure for me. Thank you to a lot of you because you are expert of the international faculty of IRCAD, and without you, IRCAD will be nothing. And especially, I didn't know that you will attend this lecture, to say to Rick Satava that without your inspiration and your vision, because I just copy your vision, nothing would have been possible. So really, all the team of IRCAD wants to thank you, Rick. Thank you very much for your attention. On time.
Professor Marisco, thank you very much. Very inspiring. We have a couple minutes if there's a question. And there's the microphones in the middle, please.
Yes, good morning. I'm Dimitris Drax from Athens, Greece. I have a disclosure because actually I was trained at IRCAD and I was part of the team of Professor Marisco for many years. But I remember that 15 years ago when I was a young intern, I saw a similar presentation and I thought that this was science fiction. And it was one of the things that drew me to France. However, in less than 15 years, concepts like transluminal surgery and transrectal surgery or augmented reality have become clinical concepts that we use. So based on the scientific fiction facts that you presented, which one do you think will be the one or two that will catch up in the near future? If you had a young surgeon right now wanting to invest or wanting to do research into one of these areas, where would you advise him to direct?
Okay, so for the skill, but you know, because in US, if I remember well, it is mandatory since 2 years to have the competence in flexible endoscopy if you are a digestive surgeon. That is the minimum. For all the technologies I have shown, I think you can say no robot if you have not the robot. No augmented reality if you cannot do. It's not a problem. But something which will be mandatory, I'm sure, in the next 5 years will be the 3D reconstruction of a patient and how you can show that you have prepared your operation and you have understood all the details of the anatomy. And you know Quino, because in France we use a classification of Quino in hepatic surgery. He said at the end of his article, the last one, that he had approximately 30% of mistake, of abnormality, that he has not described, and that the only way will be to have a computer-assisted 3D modeling. So that is, I think, very important, and it is very cheap. It's less expensive than a stapler system.
Yes, sir.
Professor Marisco, my name is Norbert Senninger from Münster, Germany, University Hospital. We enjoyed your generous attitude towards us for more than 10 years, having done courses at your IRCAD at Strasbourg. I have a question concerning things that you did not show. That means the bleeding complication intraoperatively. How does your virtual reality system deal with that? How fast can you react? Or is it, if the blurred vision is there, that is the end of the virtual reality, if you have to come back to the traditional reality, meaning open up?
Okay, that's a good question, and you have understood that it is not finished because it is a long trip. Just to say, what we say is, if we have a virtual reality, for example, for hepatic surgery, because we know exactly the position and all the abnormalities in the liver, because we can apply a virtual clip before the operation, that means our knowledge of the anatomy will avoid a lot of complications. So that is a part. And the next step will be what I said, artificial intelligence with thousands and thousands and hundred thousand procedures which had been learned and understood by a machine, who can avoid the surgeon to do an injury. Because if he sees that something he has never seen happen, immediately you can have a stop of the instrument. So that's my second part of question. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Yes, so I'm Jason Chewin. I run the 3D medical lab at Austin Health in Melbourne, Australia. I want to thank you for a very logical and comprehensive talk. But one of the things you didn't touch on is that of risk. We know that with the introduction of any form of new technology, that there are unintended consequences, there are risks, there are artifacts in your 3D segmentation and your computer processing. And especially in the setting of personalized or customized imaging or 3D printing or any form of overlay, you may introduce errors or conceptual or perceptive errors in the surgeon when they're performing surgery. And those errors may be idiosyncratic from patient to patient. How do we manage the risks that arise from these technologies, and particularly if you look at ethical and regulatory concerns, how do we manage those?
I'm not sure to have understood all your question, but if I understand that we can have some errors with the machine that we develop, that means error with the computer, how we can deal with that? Is that your question?
So my question is, firstly, we know that errors are going to happen, and we cannot predict exactly what those errors are going to be. So how are we going to manage the errors that are going to develop and try to prevent them from happening?
For that, really, I have no answer. I don't know. I have no idea of how we can prevent that.
Yes, sir.
Dr. Marisco, that was remarkable. And it's a real honor to be able to hear a talk from truly a visionary leader in surgery. But I rise with a bit of a provocative question because I am just a simple, humble burn surgeon. And I'm wondering about the technologies that are being developed, specifically with AI and superintelligence. How can these technologies be applied to the 90% of people in the low middle income countries? You mentioned Rwanda, but the question is there a way to take this very expensive, very forward thinking, high technology and really apply it to the hundreds of millions of people who have no access to surgery? Whether it's how to change the way we train people, maybe how the way people do surgery in a minimally resourced environment. Is there a way for this to change the way we think about these people who have nothing? Thank you.
Okay, so you imagine that for the first part of your question, that means certainly all these new technology are not going to help or to support a lot of people who has no access to surgery. That is, but I am convinced that all, especially, I didn't was in Africa before, and my first visit was in Kigali. We had two very, very interesting discussions with the President, Paul Kagame. You know that if you visit Kigali in Africa, Kigali, who had 25 years ago one of the most important genocide in the world, today it is like Switzerland. Everything is clean, everybody has a virtual bank, everybody has an iPhone, they have the 4G even in the mountain. So that means, and when we speak with the president, because that was also my question, to say you have a lot of people, they have not access to, in Africa, not in Kigali. In Kigali, everybody is totally supported by the government. How we can imagine to do this kind of technology when we see the state of your hospital? And his answer was very clear. For me, today is yesterday. I need to see for tomorrow. And I think that all these different countries, the day where you will have no more corruption in Africa, that is the case in Rwanda, little country, no resources, and now everybody says a window to go in Africa. I think they want to overlap that, and they will use this kind of technology because they will do this kind of technology. I spoke about the computer science universities they have, very high level. So I think if you have clever people in Africa, it can change in the next 20 or 25 years. That I believe.
Thank you all very much for being here this morning, and please join me in thanking Professor Marisco.
Thank you.